This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 12th of April, 2023. Markets seem to be holding their breath for this March CPI release today. If we look at the price action in the S&P, as you can see on slide two, another session that very low volatility intraday and essentially closing unchanged. I suspect that may not be the case today, at least in terms of the trading range. We'll get to that in a moment. This is an ideal setup for the whole 0 days to expiry options punting. If we get a significant surprise in either direction, I suspect we've seen this in the past. You can actually see the bar back there in December, the crazy pump and retreat intraday there on that November CPI release back then. Could have a similar setup today, but of course it might require that we'd have a significant surprise in either direction. But Peter, what are you seeing? Anything interesting in the internals in this market? It really does feel like we're all sitting on our hands waiting for developments.
Yeah, it is the single most important event, of course, and it's what everyone is waiting for, as you already mentioned, with the 0 days to expiry option market potentially kicking into gear. We're just in a wait and see mode. We've come quite a bit from those lows during the early days of that banking crisis that was set in motion by the SVB financial collapse. It's still lingering out there. You still see these banking CEOs here and there having these considerations that, you know, there are still issues, structural issues potentially with banks could come back and haunt us. But for now, it's not really that important. And if you look at the performance yesterday, there was a real positive jolt and impulse into the whole commodities sector. Both materials and energy were among the top four best performing industry groups. Car makers were also responding well with banks. So a lot of the cyclicals. And as you can see, the opposite image there in the bottom, all the basically the software, the technology, hardware, media companies, and Amazon, which sits in the retailing, so we're all doing bad. So it's still in that sense a very binary market from time to time, John.
Right, and no good segue to this. I just pulled out a couple of tweets because the NFIB Small Business Survey was released yesterday in the U.S. And Jim Bianco, who puts out some pretty good commentary, just to say the least, feel free to follow him on Twitter. You can see the two tweets I pulled out on slide three. Just noting a couple of things in this survey, just remarkable two things, I would say. First of all, the extremely low level on whether it's a good time to expand for small businesses. The previous lows around this area were back in early 2009. Totally different backdrop. You'd had a massive crisis at that point in time. You had a yield curve that was sloped something to like 200 basis points to the upside because the cash rate was basically zero, and the 10-year rate was a couple hundred basis points above that. But also note how long it stayed in a very bad state, and I think that shows how lousy that recovery was in the wake of the financial crisis. It was great for financial markets, but not necessarily for small businesses. And then on the right, so we're talking about the impact into credit conditions from this latest banking turmoil and what it will mean. So you do see a very significant drop there relative to where it was. It was already falling, but then it accelerated. So this will have some forward impact, this tightening of credit conditions. It will do some of the work the Fed was planning to do. The question will be one of timing for sure, and we suspect, at least on the credit side, that will mean a slow grind. And then we talked a little bit about this 0 days to expiry. If you're not aware of that, there are options that expire every single day for the S&P 500. And the reason we bring out 0 days to expire is not just that those options that people have been trading are expiring today, it is that new positions are taken in record amounts. This is half of the trading in the S&P futures options is on contracts. So new positions on contracts that expire on the same day that position is taken. And if we talk about the surprise potential here on the CPI release today, something like missing on the downside, softer inflation, we'll see the market likely taking out that highly priced, mostly priced further rate hike. We have 20 plus basis points priced for either May or June, and see a significant rally to the upside at least intraday. And you can see just on the, so I tried to identify two contracts that are around 1% out of the money. And you can see, so 2 points, 2.5 points on the downside to punt on a surprise soft CPI. And then on the upside, sorry, that's on the, let's get this thing right. of course, the upside is on the downside surprise in CPI. So a percent-ish to the upside is around 41.90. That costs 2.5 points on the upside. On the downside, around the same for a surprisingly hot CPI number that supposedly sees a spike in U.S. yields, etc. So just the flow in that is quite significant, and we can look at how this unwinds tomorrow. But those are the types of punts people are placing. If we have a range on the day of 1.5%, 2%, then these things are realizing, you know, several hundred percent gains in a single day. This is not an encouragement to speculate in these. It's just why we see risk of this moving, these types of moves intraday. All right, Peter, you've penned a piece recently on Japanese equities. Looking at slide 5 there. So what's your take on Japanese equities?
Well, it was as recent as yesterday, and the reason why we chose to write this article, or no, sorry, not article, you know, equity note on Japanese equities, which we call "Will the Sun Rise Over Japanese Equities?" We, of course, a reference to, you know, this powerful image of Japan as a country, and then. The case is that, as we talked about it yesterday on the podcast, Berkshire Hathaway is issuing more yen bonds to finance increased exposure in Japanese financial assets, in particular equities. And we talked about it, and we dug deeper into it. And just, you know, for reference point, Warren Buffett is scheduled at 6 a.m. in the Eastern time to do a live interview for 3 hours on CNBC live from Japan. I'm guessing potentially that with all this bond sales in yen, that maybe Berkshire Hathaway is gearing up for a larger acquisition in Japan, or getting more familiar with the Japanese business community. I suspect, Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett, they talk a lot about they really want to work with, you know, high quality management that are honest and trustworthy, that really and potentially wants to adopt some American ideas about how to improve capital efficiency and productivity gains, because that has been one of the things that we wrote about of Japan in this note, is that there's been a lot of focus from activist investors in the U.S. on several companies in Japan, Fanuc, just to mention one, Sony, trying to really push Japanese companies to change their cost efficiency. And one of the things that have happened in Japanese equity markets over the past 10 years is a slightly increase in what we call the net capital stock yield, or buyback yield, if you will. That's a chart to the right here on slide 5. And you can see here that the yield the investors are now getting from Japanese companies using their excess free cash flow to buy back their own shares as a capital return to shareholders is now almost 1.5%. Also, you can see on the chart to the left there, I think that's actually the one that is the most interesting. That is the dividend yield between the Japanese equity market and the U.S. equity market. It has gone from -2 percentage points in 1995 to almost a +1% differential in favor of Japanese equities. And if you look at earnings, real earnings growth for Japanese companies over the past decade, it has actually been remarkably strong, almost close to 5%. So it's I think there are positive vibes around the Japanese equity market here. And one thing that will be the kicker for this equity market is that Japan has been living with the fear of this negative wind from demographic with an aging population. And that means that Japan has been preparing, and there was also a very strong incentive in the Japanese society to be extremely efficient on the productivity side, but use automation and robotics technology widely to support this aging population. And that means when the aging and the problems of the aging population will come to other parts of the world, the US, Europe, China, etc., I think a lot of the Japanese companies, where they're already a leader in automation or robotics technology, will have very, very good hands on their very, very good cards on their hand to play it well in international markets. I have this grand idea. Sorry for going on, John. I just think it's some interesting ideas here. But I think I have this idea that, you know, the U.S. will really be the leader, I think, in digitalization out in the world, ex China, of course, and maybe also Russia, of course, and then Europe. Because here in Europe, and every technology that has to do with energy efficiency or green technology, call it what you want, I think will be dominated by European companies. This is my take, at least. And I think actually Japan will lead the automation and robotics technology. I think you have a very interesting triangle there of expertise and competitive advantage between these economies.
All right, some key observations and an interesting area to look at for how the future is shaping up, because that demographic hit is going to be felt elsewhere, certainly in Europe. It's around the same place where Japan is in a lot of respects demographically. All right, I need to get to Ole in a second here, but I just want to round off my section here with the FX. We have the dollar clearly holding its breath as well. You can see on slide 6, Eurodollar just below that range high. We did trade above 110, but it was only briefly an intraday. That's clearly the big stumbling block here for further dollar weakness. We'd likely need to see a softer CPI print, and I'll get to the expectations when I round out the macro calendar later. But also interesting to note that the yen is even weaker. So we have Eurian pushing up into highs, sterling yen doing the same. Some of that, I think, is into your space on the oil threatening to break out. We were talking about the risk of a consolidation after that big gap move. The market doesn't like gaps, but it's really champing at the bit here at the very top of the range. So what's your take on oil here? What should we be looking for in coming days as we're, I guess the dollar has a role to play there as well.
Absolutely, John. And what we did see yesterday was that it avoided the drop, as we can see on the chart. We had several days here where we just settled within a very narrow range. We tried to break to the downside yesterday, but the weaker dollar, I think, saved the day. But then at the same time, we're also seeing reports that Russian production is now starting to slow down, as they signaled that they would. Also, pipeline supplies from northern Iraq to the Turkish harbor of Ceylon is still impaired. So that's all adding to the upside potential. So what should we look out for in the short term? Well, I think now the potential for a challenge of that 86.75 level, so call it 86.75 to 87, that area is the next key before the big one, which is around 89. So we're still not in any time for breakout mood. And I don't think the market is in any hurry, but we are seeing some emerging tightness in the market. I'm seeing that through the prompt spreads, the spread between the first and the second month's future spreads. In Brent, that's a black line down the right. It has been in backwardation for considerable time now, while WTI has been lingering in a contango. It's now breaking higher as well, basically signaling some emerging tightness there as well. So underlying the market was, I was worried that that there was a massive amount of build-up of longs on that spike last Monday, and they obviously would be nervous if we saw a breakdown in the short term. As that hasn't materialized, we may just leave this gap open for a longer period of time and instead focus on the upside. Today also we've got the weekly crude stock report. There's a bit of a mixed bag, as you can see in the table there. API reported a small increase in crude stocks yesterday. Surveys are pointing towards a drop.
All right, and then on the precious metals market, my FX table on the trending, the silver is just absolutely ripping. Gold posting a new all-time high against the Australian dollar. 2000 in play here, CPI release. It feels like it's very, very pivotal the next few days here for gold, based on the dollar, based, of course, on incoming data.
Exactly, and it's most certainly silver that's doing most of the heavy lifting right now. That break higher yesterday to a fresh one-year high, I think it was also actually overnight. That's also been the reason why we touched 2020 in early trading earlier today, drifting a little bit lower as we speak. But I think the market is quite relaxed about the CPI number today. The 5.1% as expected is not going to dent the rally at this point in time. The question is obviously whether if we get an upside surprise, what kind of impact that would have. But it just seems like the momentum is there. We got central banks still on the strong buyers. We have the softness in the dollar. You mentioned 110 is a big psychological level in the euro dollar. If we take aim at that, then that would add some additional support. But for now, the silver is doing the heavy lifting, I would say. But we are not far away from the record high from last year, so that will increasingly start to have a bit of a pull on gold as well.
All right, and then talking about pivotal levels, looks like you're pulling in a couple of commodities we don't talk about a lot: sugar and coffee. Looking at some major pivot highs there.
Yeah, we had a strong day in the soft commodity sector yesterday. Apart from sugar and coffee, that's also cocoa and cotton. They were all up on the day, led by coffee rising more than 4%. As you can see, we're basically challenging the 200-day moving average on the continuation charts. We haven't seen that since late last year. So that will be quite interesting for into today's session. Whether that can be breached. At the same time, sugar is just simply on fire right now. I'm normally just showing you raw sugar, which is traded in New York. But if you look at the sugar trade in London, which is the refined variety, it's reaching a 10-year high. And even this raw sugar price, looking at the first month's continuation chart, it looks like we are also at a 10-year plus high there. So it is the production outlook for some of the key producers, India, Pakistan, Thailand, that's being questioned, put into question, and that obviously does reduce the amount of sugar that's available for export. Also, the recent pickup in oil prices, with gasoline prices staying quite robustly at these current levels, that's also attracting additional demand for raw sugar towards ethanol production. So all in all, your sweetener is getting more expensive as we speak.
All right, yes, it's going to be really key, that oil outlook, as we work into the rest of the year, because if we're seeing a major breakout in oil, these assumptions about inflation are going to end up proving somewhat misplaced, to say the least. All right, back into the equity market. Peter, stocks to watch today. We're still waiting for the earnings season to kick in starting on Friday, but you've got Volvo up here on slide 10.
Yeah, so it's we're riding stocks prowl, but there's only one, I think, key story to watch today, and that's Volvo. As you say, the second largest truck maker in the world, based in Sweden. Shares are up almost 10%. Very, very, very strong Q1 results, as you can see here within the text on slide 10. 131.4 billion Swedish krona for the first quarter in revenue, compared to the expectation by analysts of only 118. So that's a very significant beat. But even more important, the operating profit, 18 billion versus 13 expected, so almost a 50% above estimate there. Pricing continues to be strong. Parts are getting more available for truck manufacturers. The supply chains are basically healing. But I think it also underscores basically the still very strong underlying dynamics for the logistics markets, not only in Europe, but still globally. At least that part of the market is not suggesting that we're slipping into a recession anytime soon. And then if we look at slide 11, I didn't talk too much about it, but this chart yesterday that I put up, it's still the one I'm showing here. And then tomorrow we'll show a little bit of numbers on JP Morgan Chase, etc. But analysts have really, over the past month, increased their earnings estimates 12 months forward. So I think it's worth just reflecting a little bit what that is telling us. So it's telling us that analysts are not projecting or estimating a slowdown in the economy over the next 12 months. So it also leaves more room for downside risk if companies disappoint on their outlook. And I think the key question is here, to what extent will all this cost cutting that we have seen, will that offset some of those wage pressure and cost pressure that we're seeing for companies? And then will we also be tracking this divergence that we're seeing? European companies are improving their operating margins, where the US companies have seen 3/4 of contraction in their operating margin. Very fascinating trend. It's not something we have seen for over a decade.
Yeah, and looking at the composition of all this, so you have a Fed that supposedly will have slain inflation, they'll be rapidly cutting, while earnings growth is ripping along at 10% higher. There's one of those is, I would suspect, very wrong, unless we're into some kind of Goldilocks scenario of disinflationary profit boom for this economy. Normally, I think if the Fed is going to be where the market is pricing it next year, it's because we're hitting a recession, and a recession usually means profits at least start to flatline. Often a recession is a couple of quarters, but still not 10% year-on-year profit growth.
No, exactly. I think it's a very, very good point, John. And I tend to be leaning on the side that, you know, I think in the past I did this analysis to what is the average estimation error by sell-side analysts on their earnings estimate relative to what gets realized over time. And it actually comes out at around 15%. So that's the average estimation error. So,
wow.
So that growth that you're looking at here, the difference between the red and the blue line there, potentially is within that estimation error, and I think to some extent it looks odd that the sell side analysts haven't been changing their forward estimates more given what we have experienced, I think, over the past month.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's go forward to the agenda item of the day. That is the U.S. March CPI. Ole mentioned the 5.1%. That is the headline year-on-year expected versus 6% flat in February. But the core, I think, will be where we find more of the reaction function if there's a big surprise there. So we have expected a 0.4% for the month-on-month and 5.6% year-on-year. For today's figure, 5.5 was the number in February. Significant divergence, especially something like pushing close to 6% on the year-on-year, or a core that surprises by more than 0.1% either side of that 0.4% expectation could, of course, trigger the reaction function I somewhat softly noted in my rundown of the zero DT options. And I did the math wrong on some of those. I said about 1%. It's well over 1% out of the money, those two strikes I mentioned. So that's key. We also have an FOMC minutes, but these are getting a little bit stale just given that they were sort of within 2 weeks of the SVB crisis, and Fed members' uncertainty must have been higher at that point in time relative to where it is now and the degree of calm that has settled over markets. Of course, there's some residual concerns, but I just think the reactivity function may not be particularly high around these. I could be proven wrong, and we'll, of course, bear close watching if there's a sense of more concern than whatever the market is pricing here. We have a U.S. Treasury auction, may be interesting in the wake of that CPI figure. The three-year yesterday was not particularly notable. And we have a Canadian Bank of Canada rate decision. They're expected to stay unchanged for the second time in a row. They have some language in their statement reserving the potential for further tightening if conditions warrant, but they're clearly still in pause mode. The next Canadian CPI data point is up on April 18th, if I'm not mistaken. And the latest UK and most leading UK house price indicator is up overnight. Rest of the week, the focus, or the bigger number is the US March retail sales on Friday. So yeah, lots to react to, and I think this CPI release could set things in motion for a pretty significant swing trade for many asset classes. So stay on your toes. Beware of the volatility potential, particularly on the zero DTE phenomenon if we get a big data surprise today. And we'll see where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.